When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome. This is a draft eve edition of Wacky Wednesday here on the Arrowhead Attic Channel. I'm Adam Best here with Sterling Holmes and producer Richard. How are we doing, Sterling? You ready for the draft to finally be here after what seems like an eternity between the Super Bowl, the Combine, and now?
Yeah, dude, I can't wait. And I'm part of the problem. I get it. I'm the dude who's also doing mock drafts and talking about it because we all know by pick six, at a minimum, pick six, all the plans, all the dudes that we thought were going to slide seamlessly in, it's getting bleeped up. We all know this. We like to pretend like we know a lot. Maybe we do know a lot. But when it comes to draft talk, your game plan is gone. Yep. I'm excited because, one, we can finally have stuff that happened, not stuff we're looking forward to. I'm excited. We're doing a 5-hour, 6-hour show tomorrow. It's going to be a behemoth. You're doing it. I'm doing it. Patrick Allen's doing it. Matt Connor's doing it. We're going to have some great guests, some great interviews we've done throughout the year. It's also my 30th birthday tomorrow, so I'll be cracking beers along with everyone who's trying to celebrate whoever the Chiefs may draft. Buckle in. It's going to be fun.
If you're drafting seventh, is that the Titans or somebody? There are only so many possible combinations of things that can happen before you draft. When you draft 32nd, there are like infinite possibilities. There's just no way to prepare for that. There's no way to predict that. We have absolutely no clue who's still going to be sitting there at 32 or even, I guess, in striking range for Brett Veach, which I guess it's possible that he moves up into the teens or even the single digits. I don't think it's very likely. I think that the early 20s, particularly the NFC teams in the 20s, that is the trade strike zone for Brett Veach and the Chiefs. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think Seattle at 16 is when you can start taking a legitimate look. Seattle at 16 is the one spot. They're a team that I think is trying to gather some more draft capital. Oh, man, what if one of those big name tackles is there at 16? What does Brett Veach do? That's when I'm going to start getting real interested is pick 16. Mm-hmm. But I do want to give a shout out before we get into everything we're doing today. If you've not downloaded the FanDuel app yet, you'll definitely want to take advantage of this offer. New users who sign up through our link must place a deposit of $10 and place a first wager of $5 on any live bet. Once your first bet settles, you'll receive $150 in bonus bets, even if that bet loses. This offer is only available if you sign up through our link, bit.ly/arrow150. You can find that link in the description below our stream, as well as scan the QR code on screen to start signing up. Again, the link is bit.ly/arrow150. Offer is only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for the link and the full terms of the offer.
Well, we've got a fun show for you guys today. We're going to do the first ever Already Chiefs team, a team comprised of guys that are so chiefish that they feel like they're practically already on the roster. But before that, there's a big rumor that I think we should dive in to, don't you, Sterling?
Yeah, the NFL Network draft man himself, Daniel Jeremiah, said, quote, "To summarize my last five phone calls, everyone is moving up for an offensive tackle," end quote.
So my take on this, and I'm not sure you'll agree or everyone in the chat will agree, but I think panicking and being one of the last teams to join a run, a positional run, is a sucker move. I don't think that's a value proposition at all. I think when everyone else is zigging, you zag. So you take advantage of the desperation. The Chiefs have a unique opportunity because I would say at least three-fourths of the league, in terms of brain trust, they do not have job security. Andy Reid and Brett Veach, as we saw this week, have more job security than anyone in the league by far. So they can really take the best player available. They can take Johnny Newton, even though he's a defensive tackle. People are probably like, well, that's the last thing they need. They have Chris Jones. Well, Chris Jones is 30, and pass rushing defensive tackles might be the hardest thing to find in football other than franchise quarterbacks. So you do what is in the best long-term interest of your health. You do not panic because you don't have a starting tackle at the end of the first round. Remember what happened last year with Donovan Smith and Wanye Morris. They made it all the way to the Lombardi again. They're going to figure it out. They don't need to panic.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. If you know me, I'm a big BFA or BPA, best player available kind of guy. Yeah, when the tackle run inevitably happens again, like Jeremiah is saying, you zag. That means some dudes that maybe you thought might not be there. Let's just say a Trent McDuffie starts falling. That's the kind of guy. You get into that, well, there's a 16 to 18 range of actual first rounders that at least have first round grades, according to Brett Veach. I would be surprised if Newton wasn't one of those guys. So if Newton does fall to 32, you say, well, thank you, NFL. We appreciate it. We'll address tackle somewhere else. Fine, we believe in Wanye Morris now. We'll bring in Donovan Smith, but we just got a game wrecker interior defense lineman to pair with Chris Jones. There's so many ways. I think you said it perfectly, though. When that run happens, don't be the sucker that comes up last. You zag when they zig.
I mean, we all know this from just playing fantasy football. You don't want to be the last guy to draft tight ends in a round where six tight ends went. You just, because there might not be another tight end that goes for 20 picks.
Yep.
So you want to wait. The caveat here is if these other teams are looking for day one starters, and I know Chiefs fans would love to have a day one starter at left tackle, but if the Chiefs are in love with Patrick Paul out of Houston and his 36 inch arms, and there'll be more on that later. Or I'm going to butcher this name, but Kingsley Salmatia. Is that close enough? No. Give me the correct pronunciation.
Suamataia. Kingsley Suamataia.
Suamataia.
Yeah, there you go, baby.
Suamataia. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Kingsley Suamata. Sua. I'm already done, man.
Patrick Paul. Just say Patrick Paul for
Patrick
Adam's
Paul.
Sake.
Patrick Paul. That, I mean, even I can't mess that up.
Patrick Paul, Paul Wall, John Wall, doesn't matter. Chiefs going to win.
So I guess before we got off track, what I was trying to say is a lot of these other teams need a guy that can come in and start right away. The Chiefs, they don't need that. If they think there's a guy at 32 that has all pro upside because of Kingsley's athleticism or Paul's frame or whatever, I think they can take that. That would be the caveat to the run if other teams are just strictly picking guys that they feel can come in and play.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage,
all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The only other question I have for you in terms of runs, how many quarterbacks do you think are going to go in the first round? Do you think it starts off with four quarterbacks? Do you think Michael Penix gets in the first round or Bo Nix? Maybe we get six guys in the first round.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I really would not be surprised if we see that many quarterbacks go in the first round. We just see the value now. I think last year was a little unique with Will Levis falling, and that might be the outlier and not the norm. Again, I think Will Levis might be in that Michael Penix Jr. range. I think Bo Nix, maybe. But if Bo Nix was in the second round, I wouldn't be shocked. If Michael Penix Jr. was in the second round, I'd be shocked a la Will Levis. Again, I was not high on Will Levis. But all the smoke screens, all the talk made me believe that, all right, okay, I get it. You're in the pass happy NFL right now. You got a lot of these teams, horrendous quarterbacks. I don't care. You take a shot because if you're a GM, that buys you at least a little bit of time. Typically, not always, typically.
Yeah, you can presumably say, hey, we need to see this thing out.
Yeah.
It's weird to me. The NFL, they basically either think you're a first rounder and you're good enough to be a starter, or you're a third rounder or beyond and a backup. There's not a lot of guys. I was looking at this the other day, looking back the past 10 years that have gone in the second round. So I think teams might just push Michael Penix up. And if you're the Raiders or something and you don't take him with your first pick and you want to trade back in, can you really wait the second round if you think he's your guy? And I don't think you can.
No.
All right, guys, let's move on to our next segment. This is the 2024 Already Chiefs team. As I hinted at earlier, this is our new draft eve tradition. I'm going to preview these players who, for one reason or another, are kind of an archetype that the Chiefs tend to chase. Eight players. Sterling's going to weigh in on what he thinks of the player, what he thinks of their chances on landing on the roster are, and why he thinks the Chiefs are attracted to that type. So let's start off with a bang. Alabama wide receiver, Jermaine Burton, the bargain troublemaker receiver. There is nothing the Kansas City Chiefs love more than this kind of player. The brass, they can't resist the character concern discount at wide receiver. So let's run through some information about him. So if you're not familiar with the player, you guys all can be. I think he's a top 50 player on the board overall. He might slip into the third or fourth round because of this. He is off a lot of boards. Not a lot of teams have the coaching staff in place, the locker room in place, the culture to handle this kind of potential disruptor. Friend of the show, Matt Harmon, said he's in the argument, or he would be in the argument for wide receiver 4 if it wasn't for these concerns and him playing in a limited offense. That's tantalizing when you're talking about getting him later. He's a rare three-level separator, short, intermediate, deep, elite deep ball tracking. He's not going to be MVS and look like a drunken center fielder turning around. And, you know, he can look over his shoulder and haul it in pretty easily. 86th percentile versus man and press. That is via reception perception. So he is not a slant guy. He is an outside receiver who can run big boy routes. He's 85th percentile in explosive play rate. That is via PFF. Good on contested catches. Here's the bad thing. 6 schools in 8 years. It's kind of a yikes. He ruffled feathers at both Georgia and Alabama. But he was good in both places. So, Sterling, do you think this is a guy that they target 95 in the 100s? If he's staring them in the face, and for one reason or another, they weren't able to get a receiver at 32 or 64, is this a possibility?
Yeah. You're building a football team, not a church choir. Now, I get it. You want to have both. We all want both. That's not the reality. Are there some risks involved? Yeah, and that's why, again, I think you would say a third rounder or a fourth rounder. But the talent is undeniable. I don't know if the Chiefs would do this. Obviously, there was reasons why George Pickens was off their board, which I always like to go back and say, hey, what has he done in the NFL? All those character issues, again, besides the blocking, what has he done off the field that has been getting him in trouble? Nothing. Rashee Rice, there weren't many red flags. The only guy that knew anything about red flags was apparently Keyshawn Johnson after the fact. Well, there were no red flags, and what's happened now? You never know. You never know what's going to happen when young dudes who are 20 years old get money, a lot of money. They go back to their hometown. You have no idea. So the Rashee Rice situation, I think a lot of people are saying, well, you can't draft another dude like that. You can't draft another guy who might have some character concerns. My one pushback is I don't think he had character concerns coming out of college, and he still had that happen. Now you're looking at other guys in the NFL who did have character concerns, and what have they done off the field? So a lot of those guys have been model citizens. You never know is my point. Go for the talent. Go for the talent. I'm not saying you do that in the first or second round, but third or fourth, go get them. Go get a me first guy. I'm fine with that.
It's kind of an occupational hazard or just a positional quirk. These guys are kind of built like this. They're kind of divas by nature, and they sort of need to be. We've seen other players, Henry Ruggs, Jordan Addison, do the exact same thing that Rashee Rice did. And I don't remember a lot of character concerns about either of those guys. So the optics would not be great staring in the face of the Rashee Rice saga. But the Chiefs have a mandate. They're the three-time champs. Andy Reid and Brett Veach are on top of the football world. And I think they've earned the leeway to do something like this if they deem it's the right thing for their football team. And it may very well be, because I just don't think there are a lot of locker rooms that want to take him on at this point.
Yeah, I do always find it interesting, though. The talent, I think everyone agrees, great player, probably a first-round talent, right?
Yeah.
But then I always find it interesting. Well, you can't draft him in the first. What kind of example does that set? Oh, but third or fourth round, yeah, go ahead. And then I always love it too. Whatever team drafts him, if they draft him too early, you get so much pushback. That team drafts him. Oh man, are you serious? What are you doing over there? But yet a certain team drafts him, and all of a sudden it's, well, congratulations for giving him a second chance. Right? Doesn't everyone deserve second chances? It's all about narratives. And that's the one thing that frustrates me more than anything. At some point, we understand wide receivers are divas. We understand this is, as Angry Drunken German says, wide receivers are just a pain in the ass. It's the way they are. Yeah, pretty much.
Let's move on to the next player, Utah safety / running back. Yes, you heard that correctly. Safety / running back, Sione Vaki, the Swiss Army knife. And this guy's probably more of a Swiss Army knife than we've ever even had in Kansas City. But the Chiefs obviously love that kind of player. We called Legarius Sneed the Swiss Army knife in years past. He had a PFF grade of 75 as a safety in 2022. And then in 2023, he had a PFF grade of 94 at running back. So this guy's been a pretty elite performer at two different positions. I mean, safety, I don't know if you'd call it elite, but definitely running back, and he's been a really solid safety. And also, really unselfish. I think what I heard is the coaching staff asked him to play two positions, and there was no concern that, hey, this is gonna hurt my draft stock. He's kind of the opposite, the anti-Jermaine Burton, if you will. This guy was willing to do whatever it took for his team. He made Bruce Feldman's freaks list. That's a yearly list of 100 players that are the most freakishly athletic in the country. Not just guys that are draft eligible. You have freshmen on that list. His straight line speed, just okay, but he's very, very twitchy and fluid for kind of a muscle bound guy. Heavy hitter on D, soft hands on O. He's got special teams versatility that I'll remind you guys, that is more important with the new kickoff rules this year. That's, there's going to be a heightened importance on that facet of the game. He lost his mom to cancer and he made a promise to his mom that he was going to do a church mission. So he did that for 2 years before going to Utah. And then since he's a true sophomore, he had to petition to the NFL to come out, even though he's 22. They allowed it. He's here in the draft. He's probably a day three guy, but he's a day three guy I really like.
Yeah, he badass. It, like, this seems just like a phenomenal dude. My question is, where does he fit in the NFL? I think obviously the special teams aspect is going to be huge, but do you want to draft a special teams only guy in the sixth round? That's where his current projection is at. So if you're the Chiefs, that's going to be the fifth round because you're the very, very end of the sixth round, right? You do have two fifth round picks, right, for Kansas City. So maybe you take one here, get a Dave Tobe guy, if you will. I don't know where he fits in. The Chiefs are going to have a better understanding of that than we will, obviously, right? We're not privy to what their decisions are going to be. But you're right. That athleticism, coupled with his special teams ability, coupled with, again, a guy who you know you can trust, a guy who can do a little bit of everything as far as you don't got to worry about this guy, I don't think, right? You never know 100%, but 99% sure you're not going to have to worry about this dude.
He is the choir team, you know? Yeah,
I think fifth round with one of those picks, if he's for sure there in the sixth, I would like to see it. I would be very intrigued by a guy, again, with his versatility.
If he's there late, you get him in the building and you figure it out. I didn't think he's going to be a safety, but then you had some of the guys over at PFF talking about that they think he'd be one of the better running backs in his class if he just committed himself to playing running back. You see this guy kind of move like a young James Conner. He's catching wheel routes for touchdowns against USC. Just a flat out football player. I would love to see him in a Chiefs uniform. It kind of feels like he's already a Chief for different, very different reasons than Jermaine Burton. But, you know, our coaching staff and front office are attracted to different kinds of players. Let's move on to a very fun one. Wyoming tackle Frank Crum. I'm calling this the day one fan favorite. So first of all, let's just pull up a picture of him. This is the most glorious mullet I've ever seen in my life. I mean, just look at that thing. Hang it in the Louvre. All right. So he's a freakish mover for a guy that is 6'8". He's 6'8", one of the taller tackles in this class. Elite 40, elite vertical, elite broad jump, and elite three cone. You love to see all that. A little raw because of where he went to school. He's a small school project, but immense upside. He's got a little bit of Trey Smith in him. He's a nasty mauler. He's got a high motor. I just kind of feel, looking at this guy and looking at his game, he has a lot of the traits and the personality quirks that have drawn Chiefs Kingdom to both Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey. So he just just look at that haircut. He feels like a Kansas City Chief. What are your thoughts on Frank Crum?
Dog, that mullet is strong. I love it. It's a business in the front, party in the back. That's what he's about. I would welcome Frank Crum to crush Busch Lights with me all day long.
You're telling me he could. Now, I bet he don't you think he could? He could rip through a 20 pack.
You're telling me that's not a guy who you're going with your boys down to Lake of the Ozarks. That dude is crushing it at Lake of the Ozarks. That guy is built for Party Cove. Give me Frank Crum just for that alone. You're telling me OTAs and training camp is not gonna be more entertaining with that guy there? Yeah. Give me Frank Crum, the Crum Scrum. That's what we're talking now. No, man, I like the developmental 6'8", big bodied, athletic. Get him with Andy Heck. Mm-hmm. That's fun to me. Do you know what round he's projected to go in?
He's going to be very late. He's going to be a 6 or 7 guy, I think, because he's fairly raw, and given where he played, the level of competition is a bit of a red flag, but there's just so much to like in terms of upside. I don't know a lot about his personality. There wasn't a lot in the Beast or anywhere anywhere else. I haven't heard any interviews with him, but very intriguing on paper.
Yeah. I like that late round flyer. I mean, that's the type of late round flyer I would be intrigued about.
Yeah. Yeah. Give that piece of clay to Andy Heck and see what he works out. And maybe worst case scenario, I mean, a guy that late's probably not going to make, I wouldn't say a bust, because if you're picked in the sixth or seventh round, you're not expected to make it. But even if he becomes a swing tackle who can step up and start in a pinch and be serviceable, there's tremendous value in that. You've talked about Andrew Wiley in the past and guys like that who really have kind of saved the franchise at different junctures. Let's go on to our next player, and that is Wake Forest safety Malik Mustafa. Love this guy. Calling him the D-back who tackles like a linebacker, that is a Spags addiction, I would say. He, regardless of position, he might be the best tackler in the draft. I really have some conviction that that's true. I have not seen a better tackler. He's an explosive downhill hitter. He plays like a bigger Buda Baker, and I love Buda Baker. I mean, he has his flaws and all that, but the kind of player you want on your football team. He was an unranked high school prospect who went to Richmond and then transferred to Wake and just kind of made himself into a player over the years. You love to see that. The word on the street is that he's a natural leader. He was also on Bruce Feldman's freak list, and he hit 23 miles per hour GPS in a game, which you look at his 40 time, you're like, yeah, this guy can really run. But then you see that 23 miles per hour GPS. That would have been one of the faster guys in the NFL last year. So he can really run on the field. What are your feelings about this kind of player, the tackling defensive back in the Spag system, and Malik Mustafa after you've heard a little bit about him?
Yeah, I mean, if you look him up, dude is built. I mean, he is a compact human being. He's not quite as tall as you'd probably like for a safety, being only 5'10". But again, there's going to be some qualms about anyone who's projected to go in the fourth round and later, right? He's currently projected by a lot of folks to be a fourth rounder. It worked with Shamari Okonor, right? They were concerned with Shamari, and I guess we still have to wait and see, but he had a very nice rookie season, correct? So,
yeah.
And the knock against him was he was not super fast. That's kind of the knock against Mustafa, right? Good tackler, compact, but not the fastest guy. I wonder.
But 23 miles per hour.
Sure. But
we got to move away from the. And I think one of the reasons we're not to get on too big of a tangent here, but I think eventually we need to move away from the 40.
Oh, agreed.
And really focus on these GPS numbers. I think the issue is
that
historical data, right?
But is that a one-off or is that the consistent 20? Like, that's great, but there was a gust of wind blowing behind the guy. Like, what's he normally play at? Where is he normally game speed looking like? One time at 23 miles per hour, that's great. That means he can get there. But how often? What's it look like when he's actually trying to defend? Is it reactionary or anticipatory? Like, that matters more to me speed-wise than anything else. It feels a little Shamari Okonor-ish, maybe different styles, but just, I don't know, man. I don't know where he fits in necessarily. I like the thought process. I love the compact nature. I like how he built himself up, all this stuff. But where does he fit in on this current iteration of the roster? He's not a guy who's taking Justin Reed's spot, right? He's not a guy that's taking Brian Cook's spot. I'm talking about when Justin Reed, if we assume he moves on eventually, where's his successor? It's not going to be Mustafa. I don't think his style is Brian Cook enough, right? I don't know where he fits in on the roster, and that's my concern.
I think he can play that role. And also, we can't be completely positive that Brian Cook is going to be his old self. I think he probably will be. And Shamari Okonor looks great. We've seen sophomore slumps before. I'm a huge fan of his play and coverage. But as far as Reed is concerned, the Chiefs they do not re-sign these guys. They just flat out do not.
Hate Justin Reed. Are we going to have to start a cage match with you two?
No, like, we're not going to have to start it. It has nothing to do with him. But you look at the history, Ward, Peters, Tyrann Mathieu, Snead, Juan Thornhill, these guys do not get retained. So they need to constantly reload. They like to play three safeties. So they need, and I think comparing safety to linebacker, the Chiefs have shown that they can draft a linebacker and he can play his rookie year. The Chiefs have shown, and maybe a little bit with safety too, but the Chiefs have also shown that they can find guys off the scrap heap like Drew Tranquil and bring out the best of them. I mean, I don't know that you can do that at safety. You can find a Drew Tranquil for $5 or $6 million and have him play at a, you know, a very high level.
So. Geno Stone would like to rebut that.
Well, did we sign Geno Stone? No, we did not.
Bengals did. Yeah.
So, let's move on to the next guy, and that is Kentucky cornerback Andrew Phillips, calling him the surgically attached corner. Might be the spagsiest player ever. I mean, really, if you watch the tape on this guy, he's another defensive back who is dynamite in run support. I don't know if he's as good of a tackler as Mustafa, but he's pretty damn good in his own right. He's also sticky in coverage, has a triple dose of dog in him. Not really, kind of like some of the other Chiefs we've seen. He's not a guy that's going to go up and intercept the ball. He just doesn't have those great ball skills. He's not a hawk like that. But Spags, I don't think he encourages that. I don't think that's what the Kansas City system is built on. It is built on not allowing explosive plays. That's what we do here in Kansas City. So I think he fits like a glove. He's pesky, a lot like Legarius Sneed and McDuffie and Ward. He's going to make wide receivers miserable. He's going to make them hate their lives. Mm. And again, you see, if you look at his profile, you see Ward, you see Snead, even athletically. So I think if there is a player that I'm highest on versus consensus, it might be this guy. And it more than anybody on this list, maybe him and Jermaine Burton, it feels like he needs to be a Chief.
Yeah, I like Andrew Phillips a lot. You and I agree here, which is actually nice. It's lovely not trying to argue with you for once. It feels it's nice. We're just shaking hands. That's what we're doing right here. Second to third round, if they stay at 64, most likely that's where they're going to have to go to get him. I would have to imagine. He's 5'11", ran a 4.4, was it 4.42? 4.48. 42 inch on the vertical jump, so you know he can go up and knock the ball away. That ain't gonna be
that's like a dunk contest vertical, man.
He's got great hips, which is wild for me.
People have said that about McDuffie too, though. You know,
yeah. You know, it's almost like radio where I'm used to that just getting like clipped for later on. He's got great hips, but he does. Okay, he opens his hips lovely. Okay, he can move. It's so hard right now.
I don't know that this is getting better,
but he does it's smooth transitioning. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want to see. That helps him with man coverage as well. Now I know the Chiefs they can run a lot of man. They can run a lot of zone. Sometimes they'll try and confuse you. One half the field's running man, the other half's running zone. But that's what you like with a guy like Andrew Phillips. That's what he brings to the table. You're right. He does give you a little bit of that Legarius, a little bit of that Treverius. Andrew would be a lovely addition to the Chiefs defense.
I actually noticed him by accident. I started sort of watching this class with receivers, and I got into Jamari Thrash, who I like, and I started watching Louisville tape against Kentucky, and who the hell is this guy? And really stood out. It seems like that's a common thing with people not meaning to discover Andrew Phillips, but doing so along this crazy topsy-turvy journey we go on every draft season. Ready for Patrick Paul?
I would love to talk about Patrick Paul.
The Houston offensive tackle that is kind of steaming up draft boards. There's a lot of, I think he is a polarizing player, if that's fair to say. I've seen people say he's not a top 100 player. There are people that are saying he's a first round talent. So what we're calling him is the lineman with freaky long arms. So Big Red and Co., they like these guys on both sides of the line, defensive and offensive. He has the longest arms in the class. So 36.25 inches, that is in the 98th percentile. You just won't find arms on an offensive lineman longer than this. So in the past, Darian Kennard, Wanye Morris, and Charles Omeniyi, just recent past, those guys fit this mold. I'm going to admit he has sort of messy feet and hands technique-wise that are going to need to be cleaned up. Now, we know Andy Heck can do it, but you can't do it every time. So there is some risk here, but strong plus long plus athletic equals unlimited upside. So I think the range of outcomes here is pretty wild. He could be a bust or he could be an all pro. And is 32 too early for that if there is an insane run on tackles? I want to say the over under on tackles is something crazy like 9 in the first round. So that's the kind of guy that's going to be there probably at 32, especially if the Chiefs are disqualifying guys for having short arms.
I would love this pick, but not at 32. This is a 64 to me.
What about 45?
63, right? Because someone lost their second round picks. It's 63, whatever it is. They trade up a little bit into like the mid 50s or something like that. I'm in. Mm-hmm. But 32 is way too steep for developmental left tackle, in my opinion. Now, I get what everyone's going to say. Well, you got to protect Mahomes. That's great and all. But Wanye Morris right now is that developmental guy. You want two developmental tackles on your team. It's not like all of a sudden, oh, yeah, we got Patrick Paul. Throw him in there. Going to be a stud. He's ready game one, week one. No. Now, I will point out a lot of the analysis for him has been he's better as a pass protector than a run protector. So do you think he can swim in pass protection and say, all right, we're going to struggle running the ball. We're just going to run to the right side all the time. Bleep it, inside runs at best. We're not getting outside of Joe Tooney. Okay, fine. I don't want him at 32, my personal opinion. I think that is just like his arms, a long reach. Second round, count me in.
It's really interesting discussing someone like this, especially a fringe first round guy in a lot of people's minds, because there are only 18 to 20 guys probably with true like blue chip first round grades, if that. So once you get into the late 20s, I think it's a lot a matter of perspective. How much of a difference really is there between the 28th player selected and the 49th player selected? I think all those guys really have second round grades, and we're kind of getting anchored to where the media has projected these guys. And on draft night, we often find out that teams and the NFL, the actual NFL feels differently about a lot of these players than the media does. And I think Patrick Paul is going to be a really curious case to see where the league stands on him. I agree with you. I think that I would prefer him to be at around 45. I think it's possible, but I'd rather they pick someone who has this immense upside and is a system fit than just kind of get impatient and pick a guy with a lower ceiling just because he might be ready right now. They can find a stopgap guy. Again, there are free agents out there waiting to see how the draft goes. Donovan Smith included, you know, waiting by the phone for Brett Veach's call. I think there are probably two or three tackles that would crawl over broken glass to come to Kansas City and win a ring. So I don't think they need to panic.
I like Evan's comment. It says you're going to want that fifth year option on Paul because the first year might be a throwaway as they try to develop him. Decent point right there. Mm-hmm. Again, where I'm coming from is I'm higher on Wanye Morris than most. I don't know where the upside or the differences are going to lie completely between those two guys. If you are going to have to bring back another veteran anyways in a Donovan Smith, how is this roster construction on the offensive line going to play out? Who are you cutting? Who's getting let go? I mean, I'm not saying it has to be Wanya Morris, or it just seems like, okay, now you have three left tackles on the team, unless you believe that Wanya Morris is now a right tackle. We haven't really got a ton of indication of that. It just feels like a little, and then where's Prince Tagovailoa fit in this situation as well? Prince Tagovailoa was originally looking like he might be the guy, which is kind of wild to think about. Just ask Matt Connor about this. When the injury happens, where does he fit in? I mean, I don't know. I'm higher on Wanya Morris, which makes this conversation interesting. Again, I like Patrick Paul and Patrick Allen, of course. But Patrick Paul, I like in the second round, not the first. Again, that doesn't necessarily help the roster construction, but it helps a little bit more palatable when it's a second instead of a first.
And Wanya Morris is kind of similar. I don't know that he has the same upside as Paul, but long arms, good athlete, good frame. So they may not want to kind of double down on that, or they may want to double down. They may think one of these guys is going to bust, one of these guys is going to hit. Let's kind of have a training camp battle and see who emerges. I guess we'll find out this weekend. Now it's time for the obvious local pick. This is a trend with the Chiefs. They picked Nick Bolton out of Mizzou. They picked King Felix out of Kansas State last year. They're scouting the locals. I think that I don't know if that makes you a little biased towards the local kids, but it just seems like a trend. And there are a lot of, let's be honest, there are a lot of K-State guys, Kansas guys, and Mizzou guys in this draft in the first three rounds. There's Austin Booker out of Kansas. There's Cody Schrader and Darius Robinson out of Mizzou, and Enos Rakestraw too. But the guy I'm picking for this role is K-State tight end Ben Sennett. Just a freaking animal. I mean, there is, and I don't throw this comparison out there lightly, there's a little bit of George Kittle in him. And that's one of the highest compliments you can give somebody. I'm not saying he's going to be exactly what George Kittle is, but he's not just a trendy F move tight end, a guy that's kind of a glorified slot. I mean, we all love Travis Kelce, but that's basically what he is. He's kind of a de facto wide receiver. Sennett can play in line. He can play in the backfield. He can play outside. He had the best three cone and vertical among all tight ends in this class. His relative athletic score ranked 29th since 1984. And for a tight end, he's been extremely productive. A lot of these guys, there's a guy I love late in this draft who's a freak athlete out of Illinois named Tip Ryman. He's done nothing on the football field. He's had like 30 catches in his career. Sennett had 80 catches for 1,100 yards and 10 TDs these past two seasons. So he's athletic. He produces. He has versatility. The Chiefs, it doesn't seem like at first glance that tight end is a need, because Travis Kelce seems like he's going to keep playing forever. And there's, I think some of us have high hopes for Irv Smith, not Andy Reid apparently, but Noah Gray too. The third tight end is not under contract for 2025. So Sterling, what do you think about Ben Sennett? Probably would have to be, I don't know, maybe 95. Maybe they trade up in round four. Is that a possibility?
Dog, please. Yes. Give me Ben Sennett. If you know me, I've been enamored with him for a while now. Watched him crush the Missouri Tigers at points. The number, I keep going back to this, and I think it's true. He was what, number 34? Dog, you're wearing 34. You look like a fullback. And then you see him at the combine. You're like, wait a minute. This dude who's 6'4", has a 40-inch vertical. Look at him moving out there. This dude is athletic as hell. Mm-hmm. I am a huge fan of Ben. He's got production, the athleticism. I think you could find a role for him in 12 personnel right away. I've been a huge fan of Ben Sennett, and I would love to see him here in Kansas City. The issue is, as Evan kind of is talking about here, is he going to the second round? If so, that's well too steep for the Chiefs. Is he a third rounder? Maybe. Maybe. If you get him in the third round, very end, without having to trade up, I think you're leaving this really happy. It's just is he even going to be there? This tight end class is not good as Brock Bowers. And then Ben Sinnott? Jatavion Sanders?
Jatavion Sanders, probably, but really good player at Texas, talented receiver. However, he didn't test as well as he wanted to, and Sinnott kind of just rocked the combine. So you could see him passing potentially sort of like Sam Laporta did with Michael Mayer last year.
Yeah.
So I think what's going to happen here is where Brock Bowers goes. If Brock Bowers goes in the top 10, I think these tight ends could go a little bit earlier. There are some other guys I like Jaheim Bell, but you're right. This is not a great class. And if Brock Bowers goes early, I don't know. Maybe teams start reaching, feeling like there's a scarcity issue in this class, and who knows? I mean, there's a timeline where he doesn't make it to 64 or 63 or whatever.
Agreed. And there's a interesting tidbit about Ben and how he would potentially fit in. He was first team all Big 12 conference, and he was actually listed at fullback because of his blocking ability. So he even fooled the Big 12 because of his number.
Well, he can be utilized a little bit in the backfield, and we've seen some of that with Noah Gray. I think if you're going to pick a tight end in this class, it needs to be Bowers isn't a tier of his own, but I think Sinnott and Sanders are in that tier two. You've got to get one of those three guys that are definitively already better than Noah Gray, or you got to wait to pick a late developmental tight end, because there's no reason to pick a tight end, in my opinion, in round four, that's just going to sit the bench
and be Noah Gray, Irv Smith. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Either. I don't know.
You could find those guys seemingly all over the place. Although I will point out, where was George drafted? Where was Kelsey drafted? But it does feel like maybe I'm wrong, you know, but it does seem like a lot of these newer age tight ends are going first, second round rather than third, fourth, fifth.
Yeah. I think there's been, if you think about how not just the pro game has evolved, but college, high school, these guys that are receivers, not just wide receivers, but tight ends, they're doing these 7-on-7 leagues, and they're just learning how to run routes and catch the ball and play the position at a younger age. And I think teams aren't as rigid in the NFL in how they use guys. For a long time, I think the NFL was like, no, you have to be a Y and an F. You have to be able to stick your hand in the dirt and block, and then you have to go out there and catch. They're kind of dividing these roles. And Ben Sinnott's interesting because he can do both things. So I don't know. He could go anywhere, but I love the player. I think Chiefs fans would be thrilled given the local ties. The last guy on this list is Western Michigan edge Marshawn Neyland. And I think a common theme here is these guys all have some steam. They all have some heat. I've been on some of them for a while, but Marshawn Neyland a month ago looked like he might be there for the Chiefs in the second round. Now there are rumors that he might go in the first. So we're calling him the relentless bull rusher, which is if Spags has and like his number one archetype, I would say that this is it. He's got shades of Justin Houston, Tamba Hali, even Mike Dana. This guy, he doesn't have a huge arsenal of moves right now. He's just going to beat you with power and athleticism and length, but he's an absolute beast. Stout, long arms, explosive athlete, excellent run stop rate, as well as true pass set win rate. So he has shown that he can stop the run. He can get after the quarterback. But pass rush wise, again, he's sort of a one trick pony. However, I kind of feel like he has enough bend with the right coaching to add some moves to his repertoire over the years. I guarantee that Spags loves this guy. Thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know where he fits. If he's a, you know, 4-3-3-4, there's been some concerns of where he fits. I just don't know where he fits here in Kansas City. because the Chiefs already have a lot of those guys. As you mentioned, they still have Karlaftis under contract. They still have Mike Dana under contract. Now you want another guy. Where's the diversity in regards to getting after the quarterback with some different moves? It's not that I don't like the guy or that I don't think he might be a decent player. It's I don't know if you're wanting to triple down on a skill set. Seems a little concerning to me. Also, who else is from Western Michigan here, Best?
Yeah, but if you start doing that, you start saying after...
I know, dude. I'm giving you a hard time. Sky Moore, by the way.
Sky Moore. Yeah. But like last year, you could have said, I will never take an Ohio State quarterback or I'll never take an air raid quarterback. And then you miss out on Patrick Mahomes.
And you know who pushed back on the CJ Stroud Ohio State thing? This guy. You know who was high on the Houston Texans last year, mostly because of CJ Stroud? This guy.
That's
Don't
right.
ask about all the misses I got, because I had a lot of misses too, but those are the ones I got right.
Yeah, no. Victory lap it up, baby. So
I like Chris Albright really quickly. Mm-hmm. Breland Speaks 2.0.
Ooh, that's a little rough. Let's have a philosophical discussion here about the way they build the defensive line. I get what you're saying about wanting to have a changeup pitch and maybe bringing in a lighter guy who has some bend to him and can throw something different at offensive tackles. That just doesn't seem to be what they're interested in. They don't care if all these guys just win with power and length and motor. That just seems to be what Spags likes. He likes what he likes, and there hasn't been a lot of effort to switch that up. So maybe this is just how they operate with edges. Do you think there might be some truth to that?
I think you're spot on. FAU's maybe a little different, but you're right. I mean, it has been a lot of, I mean, Frank Clark kind of fits in this mold too, as far as he's just a motor guy. They want to get those motor guys in here and
good against the run too.
Yeah, good against the run, well-rounded, if you will, but not necessarily the upside of they're going to get 15 plus sacks. So this guy could get, it's just not the way they really roll. And so if you're talking about 2024 already Chiefs team, to that extent, you're right. He does almost feel like already a Chief.
And how many defensive linemen is too much? Because if you look at the success of the two latest NFC Super Bowl teams, they had very deep defensive line rotations. So especially with Charles Omenihue out and perhaps he'll never be himself again in a Chiefs uniform because he's only under contract for one more year. Who knows how well he'll play in the playoffs next year or if he'll be back in 2025. Is edge a need, or would you feel comfortable going into the season with the group we have?
Again, with Charles Minnehue out, as long as he is, who knows what's going to happen after this year. I'm a fan of still trying to bolster the defensive line. I still think that the trenches are vastly underrated by the average fan. Part of it's because you don't have, you don't see it pop up on fantasy football. You don't care about it as much in Madden, right? You don't see him on TV all the time. Chris Jones is kind of the outlier here. And I think Kansas City, to an extent, is a little bit of an outlier. We appreciate the trenches, especially the offensive line, I think more than the average team. But I still think there's a way to go when it comes to roster construction that a lot of fans don't understand. It's not the sexy pick. It's never the sexy pick going with defensive line like that. But the Eagles have perpetually done it. You're right. The 49ers have perpetually done it. I'm joking here, of course. But the Chiefs, what have happened the last two times they've taken a first-round defensive end, they won the Super Bowl. Sorry. Don't make the rules. You just have to do it. That's the price you have to pay. You gotta draft a defensive end in the first round if you want to win a Super Bowl. That's the rules.
One last thought here, since you brought up FAU. Do you think after him not playing last year, hardly at all, and us not knowing what he is yet, he's still a mystery box. Do you think they need to find someone who can get on the field this year, or should they continue to operate by focusing on the long-term health of the franchise?
Well, I think FAU is going to be on the field this year, and I think him and Mike Dana are going to have a nice little rotation until Charles Omenihue comes back. Then we'll find out what happens there. But I think the strength of FAU and the strength of Mike Dana, as far as their competing weaknesses as well, if you will, I think they actually complement each other nicely. So I think that's going to be fine on one end. I think No, I don't think you need to draft a game one, week one ready player. That's no.
I agree with you. Just it's kind of good to think that out. Also, remember that Karloftis can play 80,000 snaps and Chris Jones can kick outside as well. So they do have some options there. All these guys were on my top 25 prospect value list. That's pinned on my Twitter, @Arrowhead_Adam. We'll throw that link in the chat if you would, Richard. Check that out. Those are guys I'm going to be keeping, 25 guys I'm going to be keeping an eye on tomorrow night during our live coverage. Really excited about that. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. We've never done this before where we've had the Arrowhead Addict crew, including contributors from the site that are very smart and know the draft really well. We're going to have, I believe, Stacy and Price and Lyle and just a lot of different guys coming through. So it's going to be a lot of fun, very informative. Come hang out with us. But that's all for today's show.
Whoa. I'm getting Raymond's question in the chat. Okay.
I forgot. It was a long time ago, but I would love to answer Raymond's question.
Yeah. Okay. Raymond,
I jumped the gun.
I appreciate the super chat as well. We're hitting the one you had in the, cause I loved your question you posted in the Discord. That's the question I want to hit on. I appreciate you. It says, it is interesting how relatively poor Veach and his people pick wide receivers compared to, say, defensive backs and offensive linemen, including free agents like Tony. They don't seem to be great at developing them. And as a rule, but there's always going to be an exception, a la Rashee Rice. Last year, they weren't able to teach him, you know, how to even catch the ball and not drop it. I wonder how much of this is how great Spags is defensively, obviously, as a DC, and you know he's a major voice in who they pick. If our wide receiver coach might be just a weak link, just speculating. I think it's a great question because you're right. Wide receiver has been such a weak link outside of Rashee Rice for a while now. Offensive line, anywhere in the defense, doesn't seem to matter. They'll find a way. Is it coaching? Is it identifying talent? Where is the disconnect in regards to wide receiver? Because it hasn't just been, as he mentions, the draft. It has been Kadarius Toney, right? It has been, okay, here's a guy we're going to bring in. He's going to be a stud. Cornell Powell is a fifth rounder who can't see the field while cornerbacks in the fifth round and on are helping win Super Bowls. What do you think here best?
I think this is why I'm so obsessed with the position. It is very hard to wrap your head around. You see that in the first rate, the hit rate for wide receivers is worse than almost every other position. And that's including surefire guys like Ja'Marr Chase that you just know is going to walk on the field and be a star. But even in the top 10, you have guys like John Ross and Corey Davis that never quite pan out. I think that what they're going to keep doing is taking bites at the apple every season. I would prefer them, honestly, never. It would be a different story if they picked in the top 10 ever and they could actually get a Malik Nabers or a Roman Dunze, but they can't. So when you're picking 32nd every year, you're basically picking a second round wide receiver anyway. So I would prefer they use that pick on offensive tackles, defensive tackles, corners, what have you, and just pick a second round or third round wide receiver every single year for the entirety of Patrick Mahomes' career. And the hope here, like what happened with Sky Moore and Rashee Rice, is that every other one hits. And you just perpetually reload. And part of the reason you do this too is that you do what the Steelers do. You either let them walk or you trade them. And you're just perpetually reloading and keeping costs down because Patrick Mahomes is sort of the great talent elevator. It is kind of frustrating, though, that you have Patrick Mahomes to make these guys look as good as possible. And Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore look like bust, and Mecole Hardman could never realize his full athletic potential.
I personally believe that you're correct, by the way, and everyone you're talking about, it's a combination of all these factors, right? But I think it's always going to be a combination. I think the biggest issue is identifying talent. I do. I think it's who they bring in, not necessarily saying they're bad people, not necessarily they might not be decent in other systems, but we know how complicated Andy Reid's system is, of course. And I think they've tried for so long to try and find players who fit a certain role and almost only a certain role. It's like, let's get Sky Moore, but he can only play in a slot. Well, we have Rashee Rice for that. So let's move Sky Moore to the outside. Well, what are we doing here? MVS, he's a deep threat, but he can't catch the ball. Packers fans were sitting here going, why did they trade or why did they sign MVS? This makes no sense, right? Cornell Powell drafted in the fifth round. Where does he fit in, right? Mecole Hardman, I think, is the obvious one. And we obviously heard Brett Veach talk about how if you had any regrets of a player, you could have drafted who was. And he goes, obviously, DK Metcalf, right? I think they've learned. So you're saying, okay, maybe Rashee Rice is now the norm. And the other guys, those are the outliers. But Sky Moore wasn't that long ago. I think it's identifying talent. That might be the first and foremost issue the Chiefs have in regards to wide receiver. That's my personal opinion.
The hope is that they're improving. And we have definitely seen Veach learn from his mistakes better than his contemporaries. So I think there's a lot of hope coming off last year's identification of Rashee Rice, especially given that we hear the plan was to immediately stick him in the slot. Now, I saw that because I really look at things like yards per route run and saw that he struggled outside and was good versus zone and in the slot. Is one of the things I got right. I missed a lot of things, like Jonathan Mingo was a big miss for me, but the Chiefs were really smart to go against the grain with Rashee Rice, who a lot of people thought was more of a DeAndre Hopkins outside clasher ball winner type, and they turned him into a power slot. That shows me progress in not only finding underrated talent, but knowing how to utilize it, knowing how to onboard it. So I think we're seeing progress here. And one last note on Mecole Hardman. I think that was a panic move because at that point they had a vertical offense and they didn't know what was going to happen with Tyreek. And I they'll probably deny it, but they wanted that element in their offense. You don't agree with that?
What I found interesting in Brett Veach's comments the other day, when he talked about DK Metcalf and all this stuff, he has not talked about the Tyreek Hill situation. He's not talked about the... Basically, they were.
It's touchy.
And who knows?
It's
touchy. I get it, but from Brett Veach's account in regards to picking DK over Mecole or not picking DK over Mecole, he's never once insinuated it was a panic move. He never once insinuated that it was because of the Tyreek situation, which I found fascinating personally.
I think panic move, you're right, might be a little too strong, but I think it's what you hinted at earlier, what you said earlier, that the specificity that they're looking for in receivers. Where they're like, they're overthinking it. Just go find guys that can run a full route tree and play ball and are quarterback friendly. It'd be nice to have a Jalen Polk for once, a guy that can just flat out play football and sort of has the innate feel for the game, because they don't seem to ever draft that.
Or a fourth rounder like Amon-Ra St. Brown, which I interviewed Amon-Ra St. Brown this morning. If you want to check it out, you can check it out on Stacking the Box. That'll be coming up in the next couple of days. You can also go to my Twitter account at HomestretchKC. I interviewed him this morning. Just pointing this out, he was 8 minutes late. What did he do today? Signed a $120 million contract. He was either 8 minutes late because he was signing the contract and he's the best actor of all time, AKA like Jason Bateman. I love Jason Bateman. Apparently he's better than Jason Bateman because he did not act like he signed a $120 million contract right before. He was enthusiastic. He was happy, but nothing like overly crazy. Or I was the last person to talk to him and then he went into the room and signed the contract, which in that case, I think I deserve some money, Amon-Ra. And by the way, I gave you a great idea. I told him, I talked to Jared Goff last week. And I said, hey, Jared, do you know that your wide receiver, Amon-Ra St. Brown, speaks three languages, including German? Have you ever thought about audibling at the line of scrimmage or having a play call in German because the defense would have no idea what's going on? Guess what Amon-Ra St. Brown said about that? He goes, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Right after Jared Goff got off the call with you, he texted me and said, we should learn some plays in German. Look at this. I'm out here. I'm an OC.
Innovating.
I'm an OC. I'm an innovator.
Move over Ben Johnson. The Lions have a new OC in town. But you bring up the $120 million. He's a very, very good receiver.
First team all pro, 1,500 yards, 10 touchdowns last year. He is over 3,200 yards, 3,300 yards in his three-year NFL career. Dog, he is the most underrated wide receiver in the NFL. It's absurd.
I love him, but he is a slot receiver. He's not quite on that Justin Jefferson tier. So I think he's probably top 10, but this just shows you guys how out of hand the wide receiver market is getting and why the Chiefs can't trade for someone like Brandon Ayuk. They can't afford it. And why they're going to stick to drafting wide receivers. Now, is it okay to do closing time?
Closing time, semisonic, hit me, baby.
Great song. I don't know that they had any others, but hey, they had that one hit wonder. Props to our chat and members. We appreciate you guys. Subscribe to the AA podcast, really anywhere where you can find podcasts, and also here on our YouTube channel. That way you never miss a show. Join us next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central. That's our new time. We've been doing that, I don't know, for a month or so, trying to reach the after work crowd right here on the Arrowhead Attic channel. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow night, I guess. What are we talking? 7 p.m. Central?
Starts at 6:45, according to our... 6:45
p.m. Central.
Or maybe it starts at 6:50, but our call time is 6:45. I don't know. I looked at the show sheet. Best, because you know. Come on.
I didn't remember. I knew our call time was 6:45. I didn't know when we officially went on
air. I got you, Richard. I got your email, baby.
When the draft starts, we will be here, and we will be here until it ends. We will be here after it ends. Let's hope the Chiefs don't trade. I mean, I kind of want them to trade back, but that would be awful for the content. But until tomorrow night, go Chiefs.